This is the Michael Slate Show, and I'm your host, Michael Slate. Now, on today's show, we're going to present two important segments that speak to some of the urgent questions underlying a lot of the actions going on in the beautiful uprising against police brutality and murder and the actions of the Trump-Pence regime. At the back end of the show, we'll be featuring a new episode of Emancipating Humanity, a new podcast series featuring the voice and work of Bob Avakian. This is called Racial Oppression Can Be Ended, But Not Under This System. Bob Avakian is a revolutionary who came out of the free speech movement in Berkeley, California in the early 1960s. He later worked with the Black Panther Party and went on to become a revolutionary communist. Over the years, he has worked to develop a whole new framework for human emancipation, the new communism. And opening the show up, we'll hear from Andy Z, the host of the Revolution Nothing Less show on YouTube, with remarks he made last week following the nationwide protests on July 4th. These are his opening remarks from the show called July 4th, 2020, A Battle of Ideas, History, and the Future. You can access the entire show and past shows on the YouTube channel, The RevComs. That's RevComs, The RevComs.
July 4th, 2020 was like few before. A battle of ideas, of history, and of the present reality. The headlines were not just of barbecues, hot dog eating contests, and picnics draped in the red, white, and blue. The speeches were not just the usual competition between the gauzy rendition of America as the shining city on a hill, or a country of noble ideas with significant flaws whose long arc is bending towards justice and inclusion. No. On one side, the beautiful sound of tens of thousands of feet marching, of chants of defiance, a celebration of 35-plus days of resistance that began with the rebellion in Minneapolis, let us not forget, and forced open a reckoning with just what is the true history, the true and actual history, and the present lived reality of America. A history of slavery, genocide, and war, a present reality of unreformable oppression of whole peoples for the color of their skin, for the language they speak, for the place of their birth, the gender they are, hurtling toward a real danger of even worse. In place of the mind-numbing bromides of poisonous patriotism, where multiple readings of the former slave and abolitionist Frederick Douglass's speech on July 5th, 1852, where he posed the question, "What to the slave is your 4th of July?" And many who heard his question also heard his answer. Go where you may and search where you will and roam through all the monarchies and despotisms of the old world. Travel through South America. Search out every abuse. And when you have found the last, lay your facts by the side of the everyday practices of this nation. And you will say with me that for revolting barbarity and shameless hypocrisy, America reigns without a rival. And on the other side, an ugly taunt of declaration by the fascist in chief, Donald Trump, on the stolen sovereign native land at Mount Rushmore. But we'll get to that later in this show. July 4th has for decades celebrated the red, white, and blue, the stars and stripes, the flag that is worn on the shoulder patch of police and U.S. soldiers as they carry out brutal oppression and suppression of people here and around the world. But this year, alongside the continuing mass protests in cities and towns across the country, masses of people, still small, but yes, a beginning core, took up burning the flag. The sparks were fueled by outrage at the police murder of George Floyd as the last straw in the unrelenting oppression of black people, fueled by the defiance of the demonization and threats against this righteous movement and struggle against this police murder, and by the dawning anger as people began to learn more deeply the true history of America. This spirit, this understanding, began to take concrete expression this July 4th weekend. On July 4th, the revolution clubs made up of people who want to live, spread, and fight for a revolution, for a radically new world based on the new communism developed by Bob Avakian, went out into the streets and the protests, and gave people the opportunity to join them in burning, stomping on, and tearing up, and otherwise disrespecting the hell out of this rag. Scores of people did so, and hundreds joined in support and with chants. We will show you some of this later in the show. These flag burnings put forward a sharp poll that focused up the stark reality of what this country actually has been and what it is today, the leading force of exploitation and oppression of people here and people around the world. These flag burnings were a symbolic, controversial, and real breaking with America and all that it stands for. As the revolutionary leader Bob Avakian has said, if you can conceive of a world without America, without everything America stands for and everything it does in the world, then you've already taken great strides and begun to get a glimpse of a new world. We began last week's show, episode 15 of the RNL Revolution Nothing Less show, with these words. And we recommend that you go back and look at that show. It's really a good show. It's really important. A lot of information in it. But today we're going to go deeper into them, and we'll look at some of what was concentrated in this July 4th weekend of 2020. But something else happened as well. Sides were more sharply drawn. They were sharply drawn, as I said, by the fascist in chief and his whole regime and the fascist movement he leads.
Our founders boldly declared that we are all endowed with the same divine rights given us by our Creator in heaven, and that which God has given us, we will allow no one ever to take away, ever. In 1776 represented the culmination of thousands of years of Western civilization and the triumph of not only spirit, but of wisdom, philosophy, and reason. And yet, as we meet here tonight, there is a growing danger that threatens every blessing our ancestors fought so hard for, struggled, they bled to secure. Our nation is witnessing a merciless campaign to wipe out our history, defame our heroes, erase our values, and indoctrinate our children. Angry mobs are trying to tear down statues of our founders, deface our most sacred memorials, and unleash a wave of violent crime in our cities. Many of these people have no idea why they're doing this, but some know exactly what they are doing. They think the American people are weak and soft and submissive. But no, the American people are strong and proud, and they will not allow our country and all of its values, history, and culture to be taken from them.
This and Trump's speech the next day in Washington, D.C. were a deadly serious doubling down. Among other things, this was a call to battle for his hardcore fascist, racist, and thuggish movement. I call them fascists not as hype or curse, but for people to confront what this movement really is. So here I'm making an aside that is not really an aside, but it is to the point, and it's a point that Bob Avakian has made, and he makes it in the speech, "The Trump-Pence Must Go." Let's not keep letting all these newscasters and experts keep legitimating these forces as Trump's base, his voting bloc. But let's call them out for what they actually are, a fascist hardcore that are actively preparing to do whatever they have to do to bring about their white supremacist, fascist, theocratic rule over this country, as well as millions more who will support that and who are not just okay with it, but are part of it. These are people who support the Confederacy in the form it takes today. I said that Trump's base are fascist because this is a movement that calls for and supports naked and brutal repression by the police and the military against those groups they consider undesirable. This is a movement that is preparing to and does take matters into their own hands, putting down or even shooting down anything and anyone who threatens what these fascists perceive as their rightful place of white supremacy and male supremacy, who want no rule of law other than the law of the Bible taken literally. And I'm going to show you a tweet right now that Trump put up on the White House Twitter feed that says, "Destiny." In front of Mount Rushmore, with fighter jets flying overhead, you heard before what Trump said. He said 1776 represented the culmination of thousands of years of Western civilization and triumph not only of spirit, but of wisdom, philosophy, and reason. Really? Never mind the discoveries of the people from Africa, Asia, and the Mideast in the realms of agriculture, architecture, and math, and much more. Peoples whose cultures and lands have been trampled on in the centuries since by Western civilization. Never mind the insights and the wisdom of people who inhabited this land of this continent for thousands of years before the conquistador Columbus and the ambitious enslavers that followed him. Trump went on, "And yet as we meet here tonight, there is a growing danger that threatens every blessing our ancestors fought so hard for, struggled, they bled to secure." He goes on, "Our nation is witnessing a merciless campaign to wipe out our history, defame our heroes, erase our values, and indoctrinate our children." If I'd had the time before this episode, I could have found such words, maybe even the exact words, from Adolf Hitler. But Trump went on to say, quote, "Americans are the people who pursued our manifest destiny across the ocean, into uncharted wilderness, over the tallest mountains, and into the skies and into the stars." Manifest destiny. Manifest destiny is the idea that God gave white men of the early U.S., and even today, the right to expand the territory of the United States. Its first expression has been traced to these words, quote, "Our manifest destiny to overspread the continent allotted by providence," which means by God, "for the free development of our multiplying millions." In practice, this meant stealing Texas from Mexico for the purpose of expanding and spreading slavery. It meant the westward expansion of the U.S. that was a genocide against the native people and the theft of their land. Decades ago, the great singer and artist Bob Dylan put it this way. "Oh, the history books tell us, they tell it so well, the cavalry's charge and the Indians fell. The cavalry's charge and the Indians died. The country was young with God on its side." And all this God talk is at the heart of imperialism. Listen to Bob Avakian. In the speech, "The Trump-Pence regime must go. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. A better world is possible." Bob Avakian has done a scientific dissection over decades of this movement and the Christian fascism that's at its core.
"One of the most distinguishing and significant features of this particularly American version of fascism is the unholy alliance between Trump and fundamentalist Christian fascists. As I pointed out in another recent talk, Trump, I think it's fair to say, could not have won the election if the Christian fascists not only had opposed him, but if they'd been unenthusiastic about him. And even when the pussy-grabbing thing came out, they didn't turn against him, Jerry Falwell Jr. and all these others, because they recognized, here is somebody who is going outside of the whole rules and the way things are done in the swamp of Washington, who will actually carry through on this stuff, like outlawing abortion and suppressing gay people. And Trump, for his part, recognized that if he didn't get this force behind him, he was not going to be able to do it. Pence is obviously a critical linchpin in this uniting of what's represented by Trump and the Christian fascists. The regular bourgeois institutions like CNN, the Democratic Party, and so on, they keep saying, he can't do that. That's not the way things are done. But then Trump does it because he's not playing by those rules. He's not working within the norms as they've been. He is going directly up against them precisely as an important part of what he's doing. And while Pence plays a very important role in all this, he is far from the only Christian fascist in this regime. Besides the appointment of Neil Gorsuch, who is himself a Christian fascist, to the Supreme Court, reestablishing after the death of Antonin Scalia the right-wing majority on the court, Trump's cabinet is full of these Christian fascists. Perhaps it seems harsh or even extreme to refer to these fundamentalist Christians as fascists. Well, in Catherine Stewart's book, The Good News Club, The Christian Right's Stealth Assault on American Children, she cites these comments by Rich Lang, himself a former Christian fundamentalist who broke with that and became a liberal Christian pastor. When I was born again, Lang recalls, faith was something inside of you, something you were supposed to reflect through your life. But in the 1980s, something happened. Fundamentalist Christianity jumped back into the public square with the intention to reshape the country as a Christian nation as defined by them. It's no different than the Nazis wanting to start with the Hitler Youth. That is where you'd want to start if you were trying to build a fascist movement. That's the word, fascism. Nobody likes to use it in this country. But I believe that in this country, underneath the appearances, that is exactly the great temptation of our time. And you have to call it what it is, Christian fascism. Stewart further summarizes Lang's views this way. Modern fundamentalism, like fascism in earlier times, he says, involves a strong feeling of persecution, typically at the hands of godless liberals or a religious other. The belief that one belongs to a pure race or national group that is responsible for past greatness, suffers unjust oppression in the present, and is the rightful ruler of the world. The impulse to submit unquestioningly to absolute authority, and the relentless drive for power and control. It is, he says, a kind of supremacist movement with religion rather than race at its core. And there is this chilling statement by Lang. People have no idea it's going on. What does it mean that the conservative church that's growing in America is an end times church? What does it mean that we are raising a generation of children to believe that they are the last generation? What is going to happen if we keep on telling them, don't care about the environment and bring on the war because we're going to be lifted out of here? And you can forget about loving your neighbors because they're just going to get blown away. So that is the insight of someone very familiar with these Christian fascists. And the fact is that in this country, with its whole history of genocide, slavery, and racism, any form of fascism, including one basing itself on Christian supremacy, any urge to restore past greatness cannot help but be bound together with white supremacy. The Republican Party has been moving in a fascist direction since the late 1960s, with further leaps since then to becoming more and more openly fascist. And in running for president in 1968, Richard Nixon adopted what has been called the Southern Strategy, which the Republican Party has followed ever since. This is a direct appeal to white supremacy, to the racism of white people, particularly, though not only, in the southern states, who are enraged that black people are not staying in their place. The Republican Party is not the party of Lincoln, as it sometimes demagogically claims to be. It has become much more the party of the Confederacy.
This is the Michael Slate Show, and we're listening to Andy Z, host of the Revolution Nothing Less Show, talking about July 4th, 2020, a battle of ideas, history, and the future.
Trump spoke in Washington the day after his speech at Mount Rushmore, and he said this: "No enemy on earth stands a chance. $2.5 trillion. We've invested, all made in the USA. We never had anything near the power and the equipment that we have now. We did that over the last 3 years. He then said, everywhere these aircraft have flown, they've rained down American thunder, delivered American justice, and they have fiercely defended every square inch of American sovereignty. In their steel frames and broad wings and roaring engines, we see the story of America's daring defiance, its soaring spirit, and undying resolve. Bull. This is what manifest destiny means to the people around the world, and what it has meant to the 8 million killed in U.S. wars, coups, and subversions in defense of their empire since World War II alone. But these two sides are not static. This conflict will get resolved one way or another. As Babavakian has said, radical change is coming. The question is, will it be emancipating or enslaving, revolutionary or reactionary? As I said before, this July 4th, the Revolution Clubs drew a sharp line by calling on people to take a step towards a world without America by burning the U.S. flag. And everywhere they went, they brought forward that there is a way out of the brutality and the madness. They brought forward and got into it that we have in Babavakian and the work he has done, the science, the strategy, and the leadership for an actual revolution and a radically new society on the road to real emancipation. This is the new communism. Let this week's RNL Revolution Nothing Less show be an invitation to you to get into BA, to connect with the Revolution Clubs, and to go to the website revcom.us, where you can find all of this and more. In this light, I want to draw attention to the organization Refuse Fascism, who led small but significant protests on July 4th. Refuse Fascism's mission is for people to take to the streets and stay in the streets in nonviolent protests until the single demand is met: the Trump-Pence regime must go. How much this program is taken up by masses of people has everything to do with how this conflict between fascism and the interests of humanity gets resolved. So I want to end this commentary by citing something from a recent article by Babavakian titled Civil War and Revolution. He makes the point there that for more than 20 years, he's been analyzing the fascist nature of the kind of forces that have rallied around Donald Trump and how they've been increasingly talking about and preparing for an actual civil war. He writes, quote, a one-sided civil war waged only by the forces of fascism against everyone and everything they hate and are determined to wipe out or beat into submission would be a disaster. Ignoring the reality that these fascists are definitely prepared to carry out such a civil war if they see it as necessary to achieve their objectives will only make such a disaster more likely. And Babavakian concludes the piece with this. He says, what is urgently needed is a massive struggle against the fascism of the Trump-Pence regime and determined opposition to the base it is mobilizing in its support. This struggle needs to be waged in a serious way in accordance with the actual stakes involved, not seeking or initiating violence, but also not cowed into submission by the actions of the fascists. And what is needed in working toward the fundamental solution to this is to wage this anti-fascist struggle as part of accelerating, part of hastening the development of things toward the point where it will be possible to carry out the revolution, the all-out fight to finally put an end to this whole system of capitalism imperialism, with all the horrors that it has already brought about for the masses of humanity, and even the worse horrors it will unleash if it is allowed to continue, when all this is completely unnecessary and there is the basis and possibility for a radically different and far better world.
That was Andy Z, host of the Revolution Nothing Less show on YouTube, with opening remarks about July 4th, 2020, a battle of ideas, history, and the future. We're going to take a quick musical break and be right back, so stay tuned. Is die Polizei ein Schritt weitergekommen, je nachdem, hat sie da
to 20 years of boredom, but trying to change the system from within. I'm coming now, I'm coming to reward them. First, we take Manhattan. Then we take
That was First We Take Manhattan by Jennifer Warrens. Now let's hear Bob Avakian, the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party, on racial oppression can be ended, but not under this system.
Racial oppression can be ended, but not under this system. Everywhere we go and in everything we do, we RevComs boldly put forward revolution, nothing less. This is not just a slogan, though it is a very good and very important slogan. It is the concentrated statement of a very profound truth, which is also captured in our slogan, "This system cannot be reformed. It must be overthrown." But what do we mean in saying that this system cannot be reformed? And why is that true? In why we need an actual revolution and how we can really make revolution, I speak to the five stops, deep and defining contradictions of this system, and all the terrible suffering to which this system of capitalism imperialism subjects the masses of humanity, and why all this cannot be ended under this system. Here I am going to focus on the systematic and murderous oppression of black people and racial oppression overall, which has been sharply exposed with the outpouring of outrage sparked by the murder of George Floyd, and discuss the basic reasons why this oppression cannot be eliminated under this system, but can only be ended through revolution. The continuing terror and murder carried out by the police, particularly against black people, as well as Latinos and Native Americans, is not fundamentally because the police are racist, although speaking of the police overall, that is certainly true. The fact that the police are racist is itself an expression and a function of the fact that terror and murder against black people and other people of color is required by this system, is necessary in order to maintain the order of this all-around oppressive system. And this would be much more difficult to carry out if the police were not racist. The fundamental causes of this oppression. But going deeper, why is this terror and murder necessary for this system in order to ensure its order and its ongoing functioning? The answer is that from the beginning of this country, white supremacy has been poured into the foundation and built into the institutions and the ongoing functioning of this system. Specifically with regard to black people, the centuries of oppression they have suffered, from slavery days to the days of Jim Crow segregation and Ku Klux Klan terror, to the present time with the continuing systematic discrimination against black people in every part of society, employment, housing, education, health care, and on and on. All this has resulted in a situation where masses of black people today, and in particular youth, have been robbed of a means for a decent life, with many maintained in conditions of desperate poverty and deprivation. This, again, is not simply because those who are in the seats of power and deciding government policy are racist, though that is true of most of them. It is fundamentally because of the nature of the system itself and the historically evolved requirements and dynamics of this system of capitalism imperialism. Now that is a big mouthful. The nature of the system itself and the historically evolved requirements and dynamics of this system of capitalism imperialism. So let's break it down. This country was founded on the enslavement of masses of African people, as well as the genocidal subjugation of Native Americans and theft of their land. And its further development involved the conquest of huge parts of Mexico, reducing people of Mexican origin to second-class status as well. This required the propagation of racism to justify all the horrific oppression. Then, when the Civil War broke out over the question of slavery, and even when slavery was abolished as a result of that Civil War, given that white supremacy had been and remained such a crucial part of the glue holding the country together, the only way to put it back together on the foundation of the capitalist system was to once again forcefully assert white supremacy. That is why, very soon after the end of the Civil War, black people were subjected to the system of Jim Crow segregation, backed up by systematic terror, punctuated by repeated lynchings, while the genocidal aggression against and theft of the land of Native Americans was stepped up, and immigrants from Mexico were subjected to ongoing discrimination and violence by the enforcers of this system. Generations later, during World War II, because of the needs of the rulers of this country in waging that war, large numbers of black people were able to migrate to the North and get jobs in industries that served the war effort. And then, largely as a result of the fact that the U.S. was on the winning side of that war, and the fact that the war was not fought on its territory, and it experienced no damage to its industrial facilities and infrastructure, there was an expansion of the economy in this country after the war. In this situation, significant numbers of black people were able to continue getting employment in large numbers, including some better paying jobs in factories, making steel, cars, and so on. But at the same time, because of the white supremacy built into the system over centuries, and the fact that really moving to overcome this would tear apart the fabric of the system and crack its very foundation, black people continued to be subjected to systematic discrimination, including in employment, with last hired and first fired an accurate description of the situation of black people with regard to employment. To cite another ugly example, government policy with regard to housing involved conscious, deliberate discrimination. After World War II, loans were given to white people to enable them to buy their own homes and increasingly move to the suburbs, while this was denied to black veterans and others, and instead, black people were piled into segregated housing projects in the inner cities. And this was part of the continuing systematic segregation and discrimination to which black people were subjected. As a result of the civil rights movement, and then the more radical black liberation movement in the 1960s, some concessions were made, and there has been an increase in the number of black faces in high places and a growth of the black middle class, although their situation is far more precarious than that of white middle class people, something which was cruelly demonstrated in the 2008 crisis, which resulted in large numbers of black people losing their homes and much, if not all, of any savings they had. And in more recent times, huge numbers of factories and other sources of jobs for people in the inner city have closed down, often moving their operations elsewhere, particularly to countries in the third world, Latin America, Africa, the Middle East, and Asia, where the desperate situation of masses of people, including children, has left them vulnerable to being super exploited at near starvation wages. All this, together with increased automation and cybernation of production, when combined with the ongoing segregation and discrimination built into this system, has led to a situation where huge numbers of Black people, and especially youth, have for generations now not only been unemployed, but are left with no prospect of meaningful employment in the regular, formal economy. The toxic combination of capitalism and racism. Here we see the toxic combination of systematic, historically evolved segregation and discrimination enforced with brutal violence by the powers that be, together with the basic functioning and requirements of the capitalist economy, which involves the greater and greater concentration, not just of wealth, but of means of production, technology, factories and other physical structures, sources of raw materials, and so on, in the possession and under the control of large-scale capitalist enterprises and financial institutions, which are locked in cutthroat competition with each other, not just within a particular country, but increasingly on a global scale, and are therefore driven to ruthlessly exploit people and constantly search for ways to even more viciously super-exploit large numbers of desperate people, including children, in a worldwide network of sweatshops. For example, cell phones and computers depend on the mineral coltan, which is mined under horrific conditions by people, including large numbers of children, in the Congo and Africa. And a large part of the clothes that are bought in the U.S. are produced by huge numbers of women working in horrific conditions in the Asian country of Bangladesh. In this situation, and especially with the growth of the international drug trade and its deep penetration into the U.S., many of those, in particular youth, who found themselves locked out of the formal economy, have turned to drug dealing as well as other criminal activity. Something which has been encouraged by government policy that has actually resulted in the movement of large amount of drugs into the inner city, even as the authorities seize on this situation to carry out systematic repression against the youth in particular, with such things as stop and frisk. The result of all this has been a huge increase in mass incarceration, as well as the continual murder of large numbers of minority youth by police. At the same time, the way that the U.S. has continued to dominate Mexico, as well as other parts of Latin America, and to distort the economies, corrupt the governments, and bring ruin to the social relations among the people in those countries, all this has resulted in large numbers of people being forced to flee those countries and migrate to the U.S., where they are vulnerable to being viciously exploited in factories and farmlands and other parts of the economy of this country. And large numbers of the younger generation of these immigrants have also formed or joined existing gangs and become involved in the drug trade and related crime. More recently, however, in at least many of the inner city neighborhoods, for a number of reasons, including the fact that the crack epidemic had taken a terrible toll on people, there has been a decrease in the trade in cocaine and the high profits this brought for the relatively small number of higher-ups in the drug trade hierarchy. For a period, particularly during the 1980s and 1990s, given their desolation and desperation, the drug trade was a major employer of youth in the inner cities, female as well as male, and a major source of at least a basic income for many, even if the promise of getting rich remains an illusion for most. Now, even this source of employment and income, as perverse and harmful as it is, has dried up or greatly diminished for many. This has further added to the miserable situation of massive numbers of inner city youth in particular, who have no future under this system. No future but prison and early death, or a life of desperate hustling in one form or another in the attempt to survive and care for loved ones. All this cannot be changed, cannot be transformed and overcome within the confines of this system. Despite what any politician, liberal or outright fascist like Trump, may say, there is no way that this system could reverse itself, bring large parts of industry back to the inner city, and provide meaningful employment with a living wage for all those it is now depriving of this. Even if the government had the political will to try to do this, doing so with the employment of millions of formerly unemployed or underemployed people at a living wage would seriously undermine the competitive positions of American capitalists in the global economy. And if they attempted to do this while at the same time trying to seriously overcome the whole historically evolved relations of white supremacy, this would completely disrupt the social cohesion that holds this country together, with white supremacy a crucial part of this. It is one thing, in fact, it is a very good thing, for good-hearted people, and in particular many white people, to say and sincerely mean that it is wrong for the police to just wantonly, cruelly murder people and to mobilize in protest against this. But imagine what would happen if under this system and with the way its economy functions, the government tried to adopt policies that would deal with the long-term unemployment of black people in the inner cities who have not only been denied jobs, but also the training for the jobs that do exist. Imagine what the reaction would be of many white people who would in fact lose their better off positions as a result of these policies. Imagine what would happen if these kinds of policies were applied not just to employment, but to education and on down the line. We have already seen the backlash that was fostered in response to even minimal efforts to implement affirmative action programs in employment and education. Again, this is not simply a matter that white people are racist. Many are racist, although many do not want to be. But the deeper problem is that given the basic way the capitalist economy works and how everyone is encouraged to be out for yourself, and more fundamentally, the fact that people are actually driven and compelled to compete with each other in every significant part of life, including employment and education, it would actually create destructive chaos and conflict among the people and tear apart the cohesion of the society to try to really and fully undo and overcome the reality and effects of centuries of racist oppression under this system. This most definitely and emphatically is not an argument for holding back from struggling against every form of discrimination, inequality, and oppression in every part of society. Fighting back against oppression and wrenching concessions from the powers that be is very important in enabling masses of people to feel their own strength in standing up and standing together in opposing oppression, and drawing people from all parts of society to join in this struggle, rather than feeling isolated, beaten down, and hopeless. And it is important in contributing to the ability of masses of people to gain the understanding and build up the organization necessary for the final all-out struggle to bring down the whole oppressive system. But that is just the point. As important as these mass struggles are, if they are not built toward and do not finally get to the point of taking on the whole system with the aim of bringing it down and bringing something much better into being, then, as I have emphasized before, even where concessions are won, so long as this system remains in power, there will be powerful forces who will move to attack and undermine and seek to reverse even these partial gains. and people will remain oppressed and once more weighed down with a feeling of demoralization as they are once again divided and pitted against each other. The basic and crucial point is that the fight against racial oppression and all oppression must not remain confined within the limits of this system, and instead must be carried out and carried forward as part of the overall struggle toward the goal of abolishing this system. The fact that this oppression cannot be abolished under this system is not a reason for giving up in despair. It is a compelling reason why this system must be and can be abolished. And it is the fundamental basis for why people can be won to wage the revolutionary struggle to finally bring it down. All this is why there will not be any real and meaningful move by the powers that be and any of its politicians and political parties to overcome the centuries-long experience and legacy of brutal racist oppression and the situation it has led to today, where millions and millions of black youth and other youth of color have no prospect of a decent future under this system. As I have pointed out before, so what does this system do with youth that have no future and no prospects? It contains them violently. And all this is why there is systemic and systematic police terror directed at black people and other people of color. It is why this is brought down not only on the youth and others in the inner cities, but why it can and does lead to harassment, brutality, and murder of any black person anywhere, even those with more education and status in society. If the system needs the police to violently contain the masses of people in the inner cities, and it does, then this is bound to spill over and be applied to black people and other people of color more generally. The police have neither the interests, nor the ability, nor the will to make distinctions between good, fill in the blank as to what racist terms they use, and bad ones. And beyond that, the random nature of the brutality and murder makes it all the more effective in terrorizing people, making everyone, even the better off, feel correctly that they could be a target of this. There is a solution. Revolution and a radically new and different world. It is for all these reasons that racist oppression will continue so long as people are living under the domination of this system of capitalism imperialism. It is not only right, but crucially important to rise up and wage a determined fight against this. But it is also crucial to recognize that this racist oppression will never be, can never be eliminated under this system. And to finally put an end to it, we need a radically different system. We need a radically different economic system, a socialist economic system, mode of production that is geared to and proceeds by developing and utilizing the means of production collectively to meet the needs of the masses of people materially for employment, food, housing, healthcare, and so on, as well as their needs intellectually and culturally, and to provide them with the means not only to live a life worthy of human beings, but also to scientifically understand the basis and need, and to more and more consciously take part in carrying forward the transformation of society to finally and completely eliminate all relations of oppression and exploitation, and to support that struggle throughout the world. And as one of its highest priorities and goals, this will involve the determined struggle to overcome and finally eliminate racial oppression in every aspect of society. The radically different socialist economy, mode of production, will provide the foundation on which the ongoing process of uprooting racial oppression and all oppression can be waged on favorable ground and can finally succeed in overcoming all this. The following from my work, Breakthroughs, speaks to this key relation and process. Ultimately, the mode of production sets the foundation and the limits of change in terms of how you address any social problem, such as the oppression of women, or the oppression of Black people or Latinos, or the contradiction between mental work and manual work, or the situation with the environment, or the situation of immigrants, and so on. While all those things have reality and dynamics in their own right and aren't reducible to the economic system, they all take place within the framework and within the fundamental dynamics of that economic system. And that economic system, that mode of production, sets the foundation and the ultimate limits of change in regard to all those social questions. So, if you want to get rid of all these different forms of oppression, you have to address them in their own right, but you also have to fundamentally change the economic system to give you the ability to be able to carry through those changes in fundamental terms. To put it another way, you have to have an economic system that doesn't prevent you from making those changes, and instead not only allows, but provides a favorable foundation for making those changes. The Constitution for the New Socialist Republic in North America provides a sweeping vision and concrete blueprint for such a radically different economic system, and for government institutions, laws, and a legal system, as well as an approach to education, science, art, and culture that go along with this mode of production and contribute to its continual development, opening the way to finally eliminating all oppression and exploitation. And in why we need an actual revolution and how we can really make revolution, as well as other works of mine, the basic strategy is spelled out for carrying out the revolution that will make it possible to apply this Constitution in working to bring about a world free of all the unnecessary suffering and madness to which the masses of humanity are subjected under the domination of this system of capitalism imperialism. This is why and this is how racial oppression and all the oppression which is built into this system of capitalism imperialism can be ended, but only through a revolution to abolish this system. This is why we continue to emphasize this basic truth. We have two choices: either live with all this and condemn future generations to the same or worse if they have a future at all, or make revolution. This is why we continue to boldly raise the slogan, revolution, nothing less. An additional note, the Constitution for the New Socialist Republic in North America and the text and video of my speech, Why We Need an Actual Revolution and How We Can Really Make Revolution, are available at revcom.us. And the text and footnotes for the presentations in these podcasts can also be found at revcom.us.
All right, that was Bob Avakian, leader of the revolution, author and architect of the new communism, on racial oppression can be ended, but not under this system. It's the latest episode in Avakian's podcast series, Emancipating Humanity, and it's also available on the YouTube channel, The Revcoms. That's R-E-V-C-O-M-S. And that brings us to the end of yet another show. I want to thank my assistant producer, Henry Carson, my production assistant, Jeff Pryor, and each and every one of you for tuning in. If you want to share your thoughts and ideas about the show, or if you want to volunteer to be part of the show, write to me at mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. Once again, that's mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. All right, and now we're going out with Outer National and Here Is the Rose. Talk to you again next week.
I wanna hear your thoughts, see it all. Like a heated wave through the walls. You wanna go out tonight, you want to know what it's like when the wind's in your lungs and the fire is in those eyes.
asleep, you're running fast down the street, your feet on the ground. Why don't you dance?